You're listening to Irish Sports Talk. Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 430, and we're going to talk about Notre Dame's victory over Wake Forest, 48-37. Randall's here as well. Randall, how are you?
I'm doing good.
All right. We don't have Kyle today. Tried to get him on the podcast, but wouldn't you know it, story of his life, he's under the weather.
Oh, that's debatable.
I know. We were just talking with him. He sounded very healthy.
I think it's what he calls under the weather means I have to go play Call of Duty.
I think so, too. In fact, I wrote a post on the forums earlier this week. You know, I don't know what to do. I've got football to watch on Saturday, but a new Call of Duty came out a couple days earlier. There were so many good games, but I wanted to play. And so I did what I always do. I compromised. I did a little of both.
You can play Call of Duty after the season's over with.
I know, but I don't want to fall behind and let my skills get rusty.
Oh.
Anyway, we're here to talk Notre Dame football, not video games.
I'm doing a Kyle rabbit trail.
Go ahead.
Of Duty. One of my buddies was saying that eventually the government will be using games like Call of Duty to actually carry out real missions, and you won't know it. So there's a conspiracy theory for you.
I see a few flaws with it, but
yeah. Hey, Notre Dame is 8-1.
8-1.
Who would have thought?
The college football playoff ranking will come out here another day, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, where we think Notre Dame will go after this past week's games.
And I did not tweet out the coaches poll, which I never do the coaches poll because that is a waste of time. There's no point looking at it. And now the AP poll, there's no point in looking at that. They just mirrored what the playoff committee did, and it's pointless. It's useless.
I agree. Completely get rid of it. Because I think there's always this fear that the college football playoff ranking committee will look at the AP and just, look at where Alabama started or Florida State started or Ohio State started, and that's going to play a role. And clearly it didn't play a role. I don't think it did. And now they're null and void because they're just copying what the playoff committee did.
Here's my theory. Brian Kelly quit doing it because he didn't have time for it and he wanted to spend more time on football. Well, he did that and they're in the playoff. They're in talks of being in the playoff. So if everybody would just get rid of it, you would have all the coaches having more time to spend on football, and your quality of football would go up.
You know, one reason that they won't get rid of it, and one reason that I do like having it, is because through the first half of the season, it is nice to have, it's a top 25 matchup.
Yeah.
Even if it's just based off preseason hype or last year's hype, it makes for a bigger environment if it's like, this is a top 10 matchup or a top 15 matchup.
That is true. It is nice to have something up until the playoff committee starts, but why not have them start putting one out? Maybe not spend as much time in it.
The playoff committee?
But just say that they wouldn't have to meet. They basically do the same thing the AP is. They each give their top 25.
They couldn't do it until after week one because all they look at is games that have been played.
Well, maybe that get rid of Alabama should be in there because of their past success, and Ohio State. Maybe get rid of all of that.
It was a good weekend of college football, even if it was a closer game than what I think everyone expected. Let's start, Randall, with things we got right, things we got wrong.
Do you want the muscle flex right now?
Oh, yeah, you did have a muscle flex.
So, obviously, there was somebody that was angry. I'm sure there was more than one, but there were people angry about the score and Wake Forest doing this. But on Instagram, there was one guy that was on a roll, and
what was it posted under?
ND Football.
Okay.
He's obviously a troll because his name is Booze Nose 2.0, and if you go to his site, there's no posts, and he has like 4 followers, and so he just randomly comments, but he was replying to everybody else's comments, and it started out One guy commented that he was trying to calm everybody down and said, we played fine, quit freaking out. We had our third string players in the whole second half, which wasn't true. And he said, let's kill Miami next week. This guy started out saying, you're a clown. And from there on, he just started commenting, and he was like, does Bama allow some scrub team to put up 37 on them at home? Don't think so. Bury them and play like champs, not chumps. And next comment was, Miami's going to kick Kelly's ass. Then he replied to his own to a comment and said, oh no, somebody was replying to him. He says, you're a dumbass, don't excuse weakness. And as it kept going on and on, he told one guy, you chill, biatch. Miami going to kick their asses because they effing lazy. And he's telling everybody they're in for a shock. And by the time we did tell somebody, people like you love mediocrity. Look at Saban. Would he tolerate this shit? And then he said, ND was able to hold on and prevail. Oh, nice. Thanks, ESPN. And just on and on. Obviously, he was upset and trying to flex his muscles and put everybody back into their place because he knows what's right.
So things that we got right, things we got wrong. Randall, you said you think there's going to be a long pass to Stepherson. Well, you were partially right. There were some long passing plays. It wasn't to Stepherson, but Chase Claypool did reel in a long, long bomb from Brandon Wimbush and could have had another one.
Yeah. Wrong player. Stepherson wasn't quite as involved. I mean, he had some, they used him for some plays, but not like I thought he would. But Claypool stepped up and, yeah, did a good job.
I know. I was with you, though. I did expect Stepherson to have a bigger game. Was surprised with the emergence of Chase Claypool. Had an excellent game. And then one thing something else we got right was the running game. Notre Dame was able to run over this poor Wake Forest rushing defense to a tune of 380 rushing yards. And then things we got wrong, clearly the Wake Forest score. Neither of us expected Wake Forest to put up the amount of points that they did. And we'll talk more about Notre Dame's defense and the amount of points that Wake Forest did put up. Anything else, Randall, that we got right or wrong?
My winning Notre Dame score was right, or close.
No, oh, good job.
So, but I was a little off. I believe I said 48 for Notre Dame.
I think you did. It wasn't 50, but it was. I think it was upper 40s. I think I had, I wrote it down, I can't find the paper. I thought I had maybe 42-10, I think was the score I had. Anyway, let's talk about the college football playoff ranking and then just briefly talk about it. Last week I said I do think, before all these games were played, I said I think Notre Dame is going to drop in the ranking because of Notre Dame's opponents who they were playing. Notre Dame had Michigan State going up against Penn State. They were supposed to lose that game. They did come away with the win. You had USC in a matchup with with Arizona, and they came away with a nice win there. And so those are two games where I thought Notre Dame, or where I thought the opponents would possibly lose that game, and they came out victorious. So I've changed my mind. I don't think Notre Dame is going to drop in the ranking. You had Clemson, who I could have seen jump Notre Dame if two of our top opponents would have lost as well. But Clemson had a close one with North Carolina State, a closer game, much closer even than the Notre Dame-Wake Forest game, much, much closer in that game.
Well, North Carolina State led a lot of that game. That was the one I was actually kind of expecting a close. I thought North Carolina State could possibly pull an upset.
I didn't. I didn't expect it to be as close as it was. But I think it just goes to show that Notre Dame is a legitimately good football team, and it continues to surprise me. So I do think Notre Dame will remain the number one-loss team. And so I think we'll probably remain with Georgia, Alabama, and then Notre Dame, Clemson, rounding up your top four. I don't see anyone else jumping in the top four, do you?
Oklahoma.
You think they'll jump ahead of Clemson?
I don't know.
They could.
But they're right there.
Yeah, they definitely could.
And even though this has nothing to do with Notre Dame's opponents, since everyone knows we hate Ohio State, we just do have to point out that score of 55-24. So that's the most points Urban Meyer has ever given up.
We were watching both those games, and it was just glorious.
It was a really good day of football. If North Carolina State could have just somehow pulled off Clemson, it would have basically been perfect.
Randall, one thing that we were arguing about during the game was about Georgia. Is it better for Georgia? Because I was rooting for South Carolina to beat Georgia in their game on Saturday. And you and Tony thought I was crazy. So let me just lay out my thinking on this. There's only four spots. And if a team reaches, gets two losses, they're not going to make the playoff. So Georgia and Alabama are almost definitely going to be playing each other. And I think if they're both undefeated going into that game, that they'll both still be in the top four. And if it would be a blowout, then they would knock them out. But I don't think it'll be a blowout. I think it'll probably be a one-possession game, which I think is close enough. A seven-point game, I think is close enough for both of those teams to remain in the top four. So that if Georgia would lose, or if Alabama would lose before that game, then with that second loss, they would be out of the playoff picture. And I don't think with Georgia losing one or two games, I don't think that will affect Notre Dame's ranking. It would affect it slightly, but very, very slightly. Every other team has a worse loss already. Clemson's loss is worse. Oklahoma's loss is worse. Every other team with a loss is worse than Notre Dame's loss to Georgia. Even if Georgia would lose one or two games, it would just barely change that. The reason Notre Dame is where they are is because of who they've beaten more than their one point loss to Georgia.
No, if they would have lost by more than 1 point to Georgia, they would not have been ahead of Clemson last week. Here's my thing. Georgia,
if they would have lost by 10 points, yeah, I agree with you. But if it would have been a 3-1 point loss, I don't think it makes a difference.
Here's why I think it matters. All these other teams, you can basically guarantee that all the other teams in the other three teams in the playoffs will have played a conference championship game. Mm-hmm. So they have one more game. That's when it's going to matter what Notre Dame's loss is, because they're going to need something to hold up against. They don't have a conference championship game, and there could likely be other one-loss teams, and then it's going to matter. I think Georgia can beat Alabama, and then it's not going to matter. But you want Georgia to be as good as they possibly can be.
See, and that's
Georgia has to be undefeated almost for them and Notre Dame to be in the top four.
That's why I disagree. I'm just rooting for any undefeated or one loss team. I'm rooting for them to lose.
If Georgia beats Alabama, Alabama's not going to be in the top four.
See, even if it's a three point win, Georgia over Alabama. See, I disagree with you. I think Alabama will still be in it.
No, because Notre Dame would have been closer to Georgia. We had a 1 point loss, and you can't have two teams that lost to Georgia be in the top four. You can't. There's too many other conference championships. Notre Dame, there's a lot of doubters already out there. Maybe not as many this year, but before this year, most people thought that the only way Notre Dame could even get into the playoffs was to be undefeated. So they have one loss, and for one loss Notre Dame team to be in there, that loss has to be by 1 point to a number one team.
I hope this plays out, because I'm curious how this will work. I hope it plays out so that it is undefeated Georgia, Alabama, just so we can see.
Yeah. No, I want Alabama to lose the rest of their games.
Well, so. Okay. I'm rooting for Alabama to lose as well. Yes, would I rather have Alabama lose than Georgia, and then Georgia beat Alabama? Yes.
Yeah.
If Alabama, yeah, would still be in the SEC championship game. Okay, that's all we're going to talk about for the playoff. Let's move over and talk about Notre Dame.
Well, the winner for the score prediction contest was Andy Gasser, Gasman_2. He predicted 45-28. So that was the closest. Most people had this a pretty lopsided game, which I think that's kind of what we all expected. So he was the winner. I believe he won last year.
Yeah, I do remember his name coming up in previous years. So, Randall, at halftime, this game felt like all of Notre Dame's other games. It felt like Notre Dame had this in control, and Solon wrote an article about this game, more focused on Brandon Wimbush, but he brought out a good point. If you look at the winning index for this game, Notre Dame, Wake Forest, at halftime and throughout halftime, it was 99%, 98% for Notre Dame to win this game. And even though the ending score was 11 points, the game after halftime, in my mind, was never in question. It's disappointing how many points that Wake Forest did put up in the second half. They put up 27 points in the second half to Notre Dame 17. But to me, it was never a question that Notre Dame was in control of this game.
And when they needed to score another score there in the second half, they did. But the entire second half, it never dropped before 99%, under 99%. So, yeah, it was close. When you just see the final score, it seemed like it was close, but really even watching it, you never expected them to even have a chance. Notre Dame did play its defensive players up till basically the end of the game.
Yeah, they're starting rotation.
So that is not true as far as bringing the third string.
You had more of Kurt Heinisch was out there a lot more. But Wake Forest, they played, there was a lot of snaps. There was 88 plays for Wake Forest, and that would include special teams too. But
that's what Wake Forest had a ton of plays, 88 plays. They were very efficient. The up-tempo was the best that Notre Dame has seen this year. And a lot of times you could see the defensive players, you know, sometimes they didn't have time to line up. Sometimes they were still looking at the sideline. But I think the biggest thing, I guess we missed it in the score prediction, should know, but Wake Forest quarterback, or the reason I predicted so low is because they had guys out. Their number one receiver, their two of their top three running backs were out, and they needed those guys. But they have a quarterback that has started 40-some games now. They went against this defense, Mike Elko defense, for 3 years. And it's like Brian Kelly mentioned after the game, they tried to get a little too cute with some stuff and thought Wake Forest might, you know what they're going to do and whatever. And so they tried some things and they shouldn't have.
Well, and Notre Dame brought in the second team offense really early.
Yeah, and I think that was some of it. Part of the reason was because the players getting banged up a little bit. And this team was very efficient. I mean, they made some plays. They Wake Forest played very, very good.
They did.
And Notre Dame just overall just played kind of a lackluster game. They didn't tackle well. That's the first. I mean, we haven't seen much of that at all. They were missing tackles. They're just different things that we haven't seen before. But when it was going to happen, this was the perfect game for it to happen, and they still came away with the win.
But I thought, did you think there was that many tackles missed in the first half? In the first half, there was, they had drives.
The first half wasn't bad, and they only allowed 10 points in the first half.
Yeah. It seemed more, I think it was maybe a little bit more, maybe fatigue setting in the second half, which led to some of those missed tackles.
So you're saying the strength and conditioning isn't very good?
Well, Randall, they've been able to pretty much shut teams down and the offense just roll in the second half and run out the clock.
Yeah. But, yeah, fatigue, the defense was out there for 88 plays. And so, you know, that is a lot of time out in the field. Like I said, that's why I always give undefeated teams a little bit of credit, because it is hard to go undefeated. Notre Dame was lucky to have the bad game against Wake Forest and come away with a win. And I think it'll just make this team that much better, more determined going against Miami. I really do. I think this will help them against Miami.
And the good thing, okay, there was a lot of talk and speculation about this being a letdown game. And even one of the players referenced it in the post game about, I think it was, I thought it was Jerry Tillery, but it may have been someone else, talked about, well, you know, this has been talked about being a letdown game. And while the defense did give up a lot of points in the second half, the offense did continue to do a great job, even when you had, Ian Book in there, even when you had Josh Adams out after the first drive, I think. Maybe it was the second drive.
No, it was more than the first drive.
But he was out early on, and you saw the offense continue to plug away. Dexter Williams only in there for a few snaps, and so that's really encouraging. If one, well, we've seen it all year where if the offense turned the ball over, the defense had stepped up, and now the defense was struggling. Well, the offense just put a ton of points on there, more points than Wake Forest could ever overcome.
Yeah, it was. I'm not as down as some people. I can see why people are down because he didn't want to give up this many points. He hadn't given up more than 20 points. But look at this. Other teams that have had letdowns. Clemson lost to Syracuse. Like, who's Syracuse? I mean, other teams have this one, have that one loss in the record that's just bad. Notre Dame, this down game came at a good time.
Okay. Are you ready to go through and talk about the different position groups?
Yeah.
All right, let's start with the offense. Offensive line. Everyone's healthy there as far as I know.
Yeah. They're all good to go. The one, it's a couple things that stood out about them. Robert Hainsey. On that, on the fumble, he was, oh shoot, now which one was it? Was it the Book one or the, shoot, I think it was the Ian Book one, or was it the Brand one? One of those. He was the one that came up with the ball, and he was one of the last guys on the pile. So he, I'd like to see what happened in that pile, but he was one of the last guys to dive in there, and he was the one that came away with the ball. So that was very impressive. And then Nelson, that was the second one because Quentin Nelson recovered the first one. So the offensive linemen did a good job of bailing out the quarterbacks and their fumbles. Mustafer had a holding call. And then on the next play is when Wimbush went 50 yards for a touchdown, and he was involved in that. So,
and it was a bad holding.
Yeah, yeah. And so even on the offense, and McClinchy had, what, two holding penalties or false starts, I mean? It was kind of like a glimpse of last year.
Were they both on him?
Yes, the first one was like half the distance of the goal. They were backed up to their own goal line, and so it wasn't even the full penalty. Like, they could barely move, so it didn't make that big a difference. I mean, at that point, you take chances because you're not going to lose much on the penalty. But it was kind of... Seeing him on the screen, he hasn't been getting called for those, and seeing him on the TV, you know, it brought back, it was, there were flashbacks of last year. But, you know, even the offensive line was making some penalties and making some mistakes like that. But, you know, it, the next play, you know, they often came back and just dominated. That's why I think they'll do that against Miami. But this was, Wake Forest led the country in tackles for loss. So, even though they don't have the NFL-caliber defensive line, this was a good offensive line. And or they, defensive line, I mean.
They had four tackles for loss against Notre Dame. And then in Brian Kelly's Sunday teleconference, he mentioned that, yeah, Miami leads the country in tackles for loss.
They do.
I know. It's just funny that we're the two weeks in a row we're playing.
Well, Notre Dame slowed down Wake Forest, and now Miami takes over the number one spot. So... Yeah, they would have been second. If you would have take the Notre Dame game away, Miami would be second. So they just beat the first team. The only reason they're not first anymore is because Notre Dame slowed them down. So, but overall, they played a good game. I think people were just surprised to see Wake Forest have so much success against the line. But they rack up all these yards. That's why I think Josh Adams doesn't get quite the love that he should. Why it took so long is because look what this offensive line is doing. It doesn't matter who's running the ball. Anybody behind this line is good. It's kind of like the Dallas Cowboys line.
But I think another reason that Josh Adams, it took a little bit for him to get going, is because in week two against Georgia, he didn't have a great game. Notre Dame's offense didn't have a good game.
True.
And so I think that also played a part because at that point that was half of the season. And even at week three, it was a third of the season. And then, so the further Notre Dame gets from there, the better for Josh Adams. And so even though he didn't play much at all in this Wake Forest game, I don't think, yeah, it hurts his chances or his, but you had other Heisman contenders having bad games too.
The issue is Baker Mayfield had an insane game, which anybody that plays Oklahoma State can rack up numbers. So, but he's, even if Josh Adams had a big game, I think Baker Mayfield is number one guy. So it didn't really change.
How important is the Heisman to you? Because I haven't even looked at the ESPN Heisman index.
I think it'd be awesome for him to get him, but I think the Heisman is a joke.
That's the best way to put it, yes.
The best team is not on an undefeated or one-loss team. I mean, the best player is not on an undefeated or one-loss team. And it just goes to quarterbacks. We had looked at it. We were talking about it Saturday. There's only been two running backs in the last 10 years that have gotten it. All of them have been quarterbacks. That's why I think Baker Mayfield will probably get it. That's why I don't think Josh Adams will get it. It's just, I don't know. It's just, the Heisman is a trophy for the quarterback of an undefeated or one-loss team.
Yeah.
That's what it should be called.
Let's keep on talking about running backs then. Josh Adams, Brian Kelly made it clear it was nothing to do with concussion. He wasn't going through any concussion through their concussion protocol. And I know it was on Twitter, but I'm not sure who first tweeted that out.
NBC mentioned it.
NBC did.
Yes, on their broadcast, they said the sideline reporter said that he's going through concussion protocol.
So that's not the case.
There was also reports that it was his hand. Which
it was also his knee.
Or his knee, I mean. So, it's weird. It honestly is. What do you think of the whole thing?
Well, Brian Kelly said he just didn't, he just wasn't, I forget the wording he used, but his balance was off or something.
He said he had a busy week because he stayed up and made all those hats. But he said he had exams and stuff, and maybe the whole thing just seems weird.
I don't know. I think he's probably just nicked up a couple different. He's been nicked up his whole career, or throughout his 3 years, he's suffered nicks and bruises, and I think he's probably just a little dinged up. He had a ton of carries against North Carolina State, 27 carries.
But why is Brian Kelly like cover? Why doesn't he just come out and say, "Oh, his knee hurt," or
I don't know.
But instead, they're saying no.
Probably because there's
you want to make sure he doesn't know that he didn't go through concussion protocols.
There's multiple things maybe. Maybe there's, I don't know. I don't think it's anything major.
No,
he's going
to go.
Play Saturday.
But it was just
and
odd.
I think that was probably another part of it too. He said that the medical staff is in charge of when players allowed to play, and he did almost make it sound like they were keeping him out, but he was on the sideline with his helmet on.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was the case.
Do you think because he didn't have more success on the first couple drives, they decided to keep him out, not to hurt his chances?
No, not at all. I think he probably was a little bit dinged up. Maybe a knee, maybe his back, maybe a muscle. But because it's Wake Forest, I don't think Notre Dame was ever concerned about being Wake Forest, and they wanted him totally healthy for Miami. I think it was just precaution.
Yeah. His ankle looked like it did get hit or twist a little bit. And then he also dived into that pile for the fumble. So maybe he got dinged up a little bit there. So there's just a couple different things. And yeah, you're probably right where they just want to hold him out and have him 100% healthy for Miami.
So Williams, I guess I'm maybe most surprised that with the running back groups that Williams was even playing, because you could see immediately on his long run that he was not 100%.
Yeah, that was a bad run. Brian Kelly said, you know, it's something that's been bothering him all season. He called it a quad contusion, said it's an old injury. And yeah, I guess the biggest thing that helped Josh Adams this is that we saw that nobody else can run away from the defense like he can.
I know. Even, Deion McIntosh had a really nice run, 45 yards, but was relatively quickly caught from behind.
Might need Reggie Brooks to tell him to
finish
speed
off
it up.
His runs.
But Yeah, he's obviously not 100%, and Dexter, for his strength to be used, he needs to be at 100% because explosiveness in his first step is what sets him away apart from the other backs, and he doesn't have that, and so that's why he's not getting more playing
time. I don't think he's playing against Miami.
I don't know. It just depends on these running backs are kind of beat up. Brian Kelly even said something about having their own medical tent for the running backs.
Tony Jones did carry 10 times, 59 yards, and a touchdown. And
he had some good runs.
Yeah, he runs hard. He's not a burner.
But he hasn't been 100% this whole year either.
I think he is now.
He has that hip pointer. He's still dealing with some stuff, and he's not the guy that everyone was raving about in fall camp. He's got some of those nagging injuries as well. But McIntosh keeps chipping away at it.
Randall, I want to pull up the rushing numbers here. Let's see where Deion McIntosh is at now for Notre Dame. 2017. How many yards do you think McIntosh has? Josh Adams has 1,191. And then Deion is in second with the running backs.
450.
No, 367.
Okay. Yeah, he's been running good, and he got hit. I know he's a running back, but is there any way a running back can get targeted?
Oh, yes.
Targeting get me called, you know, for hitting a running back because the paint chips. That's the second time in Notre Dame that's happened to a Notre Dame player this year. The paint chips just flying everywhere, and there's not even a review. There's nothing. And, of course, he gets up. This is what I hate about the whole targeting. He gets up, and he keeps on playing. If that would have been against any other player on the team, it would be a big deal. Everybody would be fussing about targeting. He'd be on the sideline, this and that. But running backs, oh, basically they're disposable. Get up and, you know,
shake it off.
Tape him up. It's always a joke. The guy saw a dead crocodile beside the road and thought it was all dried out. And the coach told him, oh, he's good to go. Tape him up and send him out for the second half. So it's just, that's annoying.
A dead crocodile?
See. It's a Pat McManus joke where they were down south. The football team was, and the team saw this dried up crocodile beside the road, a dead crocodile beside the road, and thought it was so terrible and disgusting. The coach pipes up, oh, he's still good. Tape him up and send him out for the second half. So,
okay. Let's talk about the wide receivers and the tight ends. Tight ends, we didn't see Alize Mack. We did see more of Wisher and more of Cole Kmet. Wisher had 3 catches, 17 yards, and a touchdown. And Kmet had 2 catches and 1 drop. That was familiar.
Wisher did as well.
True.
So we had discussion about that on the forum. What are your thoughts on the...
Is it just a tight end group? Well, it's not just a tight end group. That's the problem. It's also the wide receivers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an
issue. It seemed like they had to make up for Alize Mack's drop, and they... But Wisher did play more, and we saw Kmet out there.
Yeah.
But Smythe, each of them made some nice catches. It seemed like they were more involved. Do you think that was just because of how the game was, or is it more spread out without Mack in there?
No. I don't. But they had 7 targets between the two of them, 5 catches. And we've seen Alize Mack get close to those numbers. He never had 5 catches, I don't think, but he has had 5 targets, 6, 7, maybe even 6 or 7 targets in games.
Well, no, what I'm saying is it better? Is the team, do they have more success using Smythe, Wisher, and Kmet combined, though, you know, because it's spread out, versus having Alize Mack in there and he's the lone guy getting receptions and dropping a couple of them?
But these guys are, I mean, Smythe didn't drop one, but Wisher and Kmet are also dropping them. I don't think so. I don't think the team is better with getting more targets to Wisher and Komet. I'm disappointed in Max drops, but these guys are dropping balls too.
Yeah, but it was spread out more, is what I'm saying.
Between the players, but not, what do you mean spread out?
Yeah, between the players.
Just as far as more...
Instead of knowing that Mac is going to be the
more
guy getting
competition.
Well, even for opposing defenses, if Mac's out there, he's getting all the he's getting all the targets from the tight end group.
No, Durham's always been getting targets too. I mean, he only had he was only targeted twice, and that's probably that's I'd say that's pretty normal.
Yeah, that's true. But
wide receivers, I was shocked by the game Claypool had. Thought coming into this season he'd be a big time playmaker, and he hasn't been, but he was on Saturday. 9 catches, 180 yards, 1 touchdown. And he was targeted heavy 13 times. He also dropped the ball a few times. St. Brown also had a ton of targets thrown his way. 8 targets, caught 2 for 36.
I don't know what they have to do, but something has to happen with these receivers. Brian Kelly said they are going to be harder on them in practice as far as catching the ball, because this is getting kind of ridiculous.
I still think Stefferson is your most consistent ball catcher. He did. It was hard to tell if the ball was knocked down. I think that the defender did hit the ball, and it would have been really tough, almost impossible to come away with that catch. I know some when we were watching it, some of you guys thought that it just bounced off his hands.
The one hit him in the face mask, though.
It did?
Yes.
At the back of the head face mask?
No, the front in the face mask, and he didn't get it. Which, I will say that some of these passes, Wimbush is throwing it really hard, especially to one of the tight ends in the end zone.
Yes.
That is Wimbush. He can't throw it that hard. And so that makes a difference, too. That's adding to those. But those guys need to make those catches. I mean, there was 2 in a row where Claypool and then EQ, they both dropped them, and those could have been touchdowns. Like, it's what Wake Forest, their coach said afterwards, this could have been, yeah, Notre Dame gained 700-some yards. This could have been 900 if they would just cleaned up their game a little bit.
Two of those were on the same drive.
Yeah, were consecutive throws.
Yeah. So I'm saying that wouldn't have added up to.
Yeah, I know, but they made mistakes, and the drops is just here's what. Okay, we were talking about it on the forums a little bit. You know how Mac drops the ball and whatever. Remember that was the complaint about Will Fuller going to the NFL. He doesn't seem to have that issue now.
And as a senior, I thought, if memory serves, I thought that did get a lot better. Or not as a senior, but as a junior, from his sophomore to his junior year.
But that was the biggest complaint about him going into the draft, was he drops the ball. Yeah, he can make big plays, but he drops the ball. So what I'm saying is I do think it's something that's correctable, but the issue is can they correct it at Notre Dame before they go pro? So they need to keep working on it. I mean, obviously it can be correctable. But I've also wondered about the gloves, because it was raining. And that's always been, yeah, the gloves can help you, but we've also heard that if they get wet, it's even worse. And so I think it was last year at some point players ditched gloves. Was it the Clemson game a couple years ago in that downpour?
I don't remember, but... They should know that when it's time to take them off, and the coaches should know, or the staff should know when it's time. Hey, at this point, it's no longer helping.
It was more than just this game. Yeah, it was rainy, wet on Saturday, but they need to do better. But Claypool, you know, made that. He dropped the ball, but then he had a couple of huge plays right after that, and had that touchdown. So he recovered in a big way. And, yeah, one of those passes that was too hard was to Boykin. Boykin could have probably had that, but the pass was just way too hard. It was hard to catch.
Boykin did add to his, now for this season, he has 6 catches, 98 yards, and 1 touchdown. And on Saturday, he had two catches for 14 yards.
And so what... At this point, what are you thinking about the screen pass?
They need to keep on using it because they need to work on it and get it working. And there was there was a play or two that it did work, but too many times it's getting blown up.
Well, that's what I hate. I don't care if they use it every once in a while, but on one of the first drives, it stalled because they tried it two consecutive times. They don't have success on it.
They need to get better at blocking it, and then the ball catcher needs to do a better job of navigating through the blockers.
Yeah. So, fine, try it every once in a while. I hate it. It's not going to work. They need to do a lot of work before it's going to, but it cost them a drive because they tried it two consecutive times and they had third and long and they just couldn't convert. Claypool had the mask on, which I thought was kind of odd because he's a guy that comes from Canada and should be used to the cold. So maybe some of the other guy, he had a monster game, so maybe the other guys should ask him how to dress and prep for the cold.
Yeah, but you know Canadians are soft.
Wow.
All right, let's talk about the quarterbacks. Brandon Wimbush, 15 of 30, 280 yards, one touchdown through the air, 110 yards rushing, and two touchdowns on the ground. And then Bookhead was 8 for 8, 50 yards, and one passing touchdown. And let's start with Books' touchdown pass. When Brandon had his run, got close to the end zone, got hit, and then left the game. And the play call was perfect. And Brian Kelly said afterwards or on Sunday that they had that play ready, they practiced it, and they expected Wake to sell out to stop the run, because that's what I expected. I expected Notre Dame to just pound it until they got in there, but instead they had Wisher go out for the pass, and it was probably the easiest touchdown pass that Book has ever thrown.
Well, I think it helped that it was Book. I don't think it would have been that easy with Wimbush.
Whoa, what do you mean?
Because Wimbush...
Because he got hit?
No, because Wimbush, they did not... Part of the reason they did not expect a pass is because you have a quarterback coming in cold off the bench.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame usually runs on the first play. And Book threw it. I think that had a lot to do with it. You might be right. That is a play call they wanted to use, but it made it a lot easier because it was Book.
Well,
I don't think it would have been that easy. They would have had somebody back there.
It makes it a lot more deceptive, but it also makes it a lot tougher to have confidence in Book and Gutsy on Chip Long's part to call that. Well, true.
But as Notre Dame, they knew he could do that. But a lot of the reason it was that easy is because it was Book.
Yeah, but Ronald, I still expected, even with Wimbush in there without him getting hit and
to pass the ball.
I expected them to run it, if Wimbush would have been there.
Yeah, but they would have. I don't think the defense's play call would have been exactly the same.
The defense probably wouldn't have sold out as much as they did, and they sold out.
Yeah, because it was a quarterback coming off the bench cold. So,
but Brandon Wimbush, I mean, his numbers, he would have passed for well over 300 yards if these receivers would have caught the ball.
Yeah.
And I thought
he's looking much better.
Yeah. No, the ball is no longer on those long passes. It's now the wide receiver's part. They're getting their hands on it. They need to come down with it. It's not like they're always being just overthrown or out of bounds anymore.
Yeah, but they're always, it's the same thing. They're always just a little bit short.
The passes?
Yeah. And so the receivers have to slow down a little bit or come back
always,
just a little
they're
bit.
They're not always just a little short.
But if there's something wrong with the pass, it's usually a hair short.
Well, in the beginning of the year, it was overthrown too many times.
Yeah. But I'm saying it's the same thing. It'll get better. That's what I'm saying. It'll get better. It's not an issue of Brandon Wimbush being all over the field. All he's got to do is just change a little bit because he's doing the same thing on each throw. And yeah, he needs to change something.
I'm mostly talking about passes down the field, like deep, long passes.
Yeah. But they're always short.
They're not always short.
They have to come back to him.
A couple times.
EQ should have been in the end zone when he caught that, when he dropped that pass. He should, but he had to kind of turn around. He had to come back a little bit.
Yes. I mean,
you don't those throws where you have a Will Fuller. I mean, obviously it's Will, but I'm saying ahead of the player, and they have to. This week it wasn't. He has overthrown. Last week he did overthrow him.
I would have said this entire season he's usually been overthrowing them. on the.
I'm saying this game.
Yes, on this game, yeah.
But he's doing this. It was the same thing.
And it was rainy, so that does. The weather will play a little bit of part in that too.
But he's stepping up in the pocket. He's watching for guys downfield, and he's gaining confidence. I mean, it's huge, the difference that we see now. And it was just easy to forget at the beginning of the season that this was his first year starting.
Yeah.
And we knew it was going to happen because he was one of the he had the best completion percentage in the country, one of the best in the country when he was in high school. But we saw what made Brandon Wimbush so good was when he took off and ran. I mean, the one should have been a sack, and instead he got a first down. And then the 50-yard run for touchdown, he makes plays out of nothing. And it's good to see that.
And I think that was a designed – I think it was a check, but that he was supposed to run that ball on that 50-yard run.
Oh, yeah. The one play where he was basically wrapped up and it would have been short of a first down, it was actually a fourth down. Somehow he twisted and turned and lunged and got the first down. And basically that was, we can thank Matt Bayless for that first down. Because he should have been sacked.
Didn't Pete Sampson from Irish Illustrated tweet out something about
a lot of people
first down by
Bayless. Yeah, quite a few people were tweeting stuff about that. I think he even mentioned it after the game. Wimbush even said, you know, that some of it is that because of the strength and conditioning. But that was incredible. But his left hand is beat up, supposedly. It's a little scary to see him on the ground like that because we weren't sure what had happened.
I know.
But Brian Kelly wanted to keep him out in the second half, but Wimbush wasn't going to hear anything like that and wanted to go back in the game.
Okay, so. Anything more on the offense?
They both had a fumble, which was bad. The helmet hit Wimbush, and that was a scary moment, but Notre Dame recovered both of them, so they do need to do a little bit better job hanging on to the ball. But Book is a good backup. I mean, we've talked about it before. We never expect him to come in and do what he does. He can run. I mean, he had a long run as well. He can pass. I mean, you don't have to worry about the backup coming in.
He's better than I expected. Yeah. No question about that. Yeah. Okay, defensive line.
Did you see Khalid Kareem's injury, the picture of his, why he got up so slow?
I don't like watching people get hurt. I was actually looking at it, but I was looking at something else on the screen when they were showing the replay.
You don't like to watch people get hurt, but then you're trying to find time to play Call of Duty.
Those aren't people. Those are just ones and zeros.
Okay. No, he basically did the splits, and his knee bent the wrong direction, kind of called it. What did Brian Kelly call it? Hyperextended his knee.
Yeah.
But it looks...
When he said that, I expect him to be out definitely for this week, but Brian Kelly said...
No, he came back in and played after the injury.
Or after seeing it.
Gotcha.
But Brian Kelly said he's sore, but he's good to go.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking... I was looking up total tackles here.
I thought they would have gotten maybe a little more pressure, but you know, this is an experienced offensive line. I think some of it was just, especially in the second half, especially, it didn't seem like they brought as much pressure as what they normally do.
Well, I think part of that was the tempo. I mean, Notre Dame on third downs loves to bring in their blitz package with Julian Okorah, yeah. And I think that is something that. Well, I don't know. But Brian Kelly said that there was some coaching decisions made that if they would have known the outcome, they probably would have done things differently. And I think part of, specifically, I'm not sure, but something to answer the up-tempo that Wake Forest was using.
Yeah, it just seemed like in the second half, they would often just bring three guys would rush the quarterback, or they'd have guys kind of wait and see what happened. It just, they weren't as aggressive as what we've seen before. But you did see guys still making plays. Dalen Hayes had a nice tackle for loss. Julian Okorah ran down the running back from behind. So they were still making plays, but they just didn't seem as aggressive, and maybe that was just kind of their lack of effort.
Tilray had a quarterback hurry and half a tackle for loss, and Kareem had 1.5 tackles for loss and 2 quarterback hurries. It has been really impressive what Kareem has been.
He was out there a lot.
Has grown into over maybe the last third or half. Yeah, the last half of the season here.
Yeah.
Linebackers, Coney again led the team, 12 tackles. He was the only player that had a sack and 3 tackles for loss.
And
so aside from the sack, he had 2 other TFLs.
12 tackles, and close to him was Love with 7. Well, Coleman and Morgan had 7 each. But he wasn't out there as much in the second half. We saw a lot more of Greer in the second half. And Greer was still making plays, but Coney is just everywhere.
Coney is playing.
You need to keep him on the field.
He is playing as well as I think a will or middle linebacker can play, wherever he's at. I mean, he's just playing phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's always there to stop the run, getting off blocks, plugging holes. It's just amazing. And I think he was just playing with such high confidence.
Yeah, and he came. There was one play where the quarterback's running back got to the outside, and everybody's running towards the sideline, and he just came cruising over there. It's basically like no gain, but it looked like he was just passing everybody up, and he was going to make that play. I mean, he's getting places in a hurry.
Can't remember, that's, we used to see Jalen Smith do that to Joe Schmidt.
Exactly. But he, well, this game, I'm fine. He wasn't out there as much in the second half. Doesn't need to be, but he's a very critical piece, and you need to have him out there in the field.
Tranquil had 6 tackles, and we saw Bilal was in there. I think he was, it seemed like he was in there more than normal. He was out there quite a bit.
It was more in the second half. Yeah. Tranquil, I thought he made, this is maybe one of his worst games. He missed some tackles. He didn't play, I think they were playing zone, and he went after the slot and got caught up, and the wide receiver was wide open. He was supposed to have the wide receiver, and he got caught up there. So this definitely wasn't one of his best games.
The one, I think it was just a bad defensive play call, but there was the touchdown pass. It was either to a running back or a tight end, but Greer was in coverage, in man coverage, and the safety came down and almost rubbed Greer off, made him change the path that he was trying to go to, and it just left either the tight end or the running back wide open.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it probably would have ended up being a touchdown pass anyway, even if Greer wouldn't have been rubbed off from the safety. But that was one thing that, you know, you don't want to see that happen against Miami, where you're interfering with your own players, getting in each other's ways.
Well, Notre Dame, the defense has only given up 1 rushing touchdown up to this game, and they gave up 2. So that was not good to see. But it was just, yeah, like Brian Kelly said, it just wasn't a good game. Some of it was on the coaches, too, trying to get too cute.
It was 3 rushing touchdowns.
Was it 3?
Yeah.
Okay, I was thinking it was 2. Yeah, that's not good.
Quarterback and then 2 running backs. Okay, then the cornerbacks, Julian Love. Brian Kelly said he's one of the strongest players on the team. And that's one reason why
we saw it in one of the first drives where he hung on to the guy. I mean, the guy was not going to gain any yards. You often see other players, you know, they'll wrap somebody up and the guy can still lunge forward for a couple yards. That does not that did not happen with Julian Love.
He had 7 tackles, 5 solo, 1 tackle for loss, the interception, and 3 breakups. And I think the interception counts as a breakup. I think I read that.
I'm not sure on that.
I'm pretty sure they count that as a breakup. But either way, he does lead the Notre Dame record now for
pass breakups. He had that one interception. It would have been nice if he would have got the touchdown. He was very close.
But
he should have had another interception. He dropped. I guess he's got the same issues the wide receivers do, and he dropped an interception. That should have been easy interception for him. And then, did you think he got forced that fumble? The wide receiver had the receiver caught that.
Yes, it was close.
Ref was going to let him play it out, and then they said the sideline, the guy on the sideline, called or whistled it dead, and that's why they had to let it go. But that should have been a fumble.
Yeah, it looked like a fumble, but it was close.
So basically, Julian Love had insane stats, and he missed some big plays, or he didn't get some big plays. So,
and that interception, missed interception, was tougher than what the wide receivers are missing, the catches they're missing.
Yeah.
Okay. Nick Watkins started the game but went out, and Troy Pride Jr. came in. Go ahead.
Brian Kelly said that he has tendonitis that he's been dealing with, but he had some bad plays there in the beginning of the game. And so maybe he did have tendonitis, but I'm pretty sure that the couple plays that he messed up on kind of helped the staff decide that his tendonitis was bad.
And he does have 7 pass breakups on the season, and then Sean Crawford has 5. But Nick Watkins, I still think, I don't think he lost his starting job or anything like that. The coach, Brian Kelly, seemed very confident in his ability, and I expect he'll be number one on the depth chart come Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, but it shows how close Troy Pride is. I mean, that they have confidence in him to come in and play if Watkins isn't having his best day. Pride did give up the 1 touchdown. But it's good to see that Pride has stepped up like that.
He had 4 tackles and 1 pass breakup.
Yeah, so he's definitely getting better as the season progresses. Sean Crawford, the one play, he went for the interception. He did everything right. He turned around just like one and went for the interception. And at that point, I think if he had just tried to knock the ball down, he would maybe got it. But it was a completed pass.
If he would have knocked it down, it wouldn't have been completed.
Yeah. But he went for the interception and missed it.
Hey, I'm willing to take that risk. I mean, not if you're in the end zone, at the end of a half, maybe. But definitely go for the pick.
I'm with you on that.
All right, then safeties. Coleman had a ton of tackles on the day as well. Savin, he had 1 pass breakup of his own.
See, that I think that in itself shows that the defense having a bad day is because the safeties actually had to clean up.
Yeah, every other, pretty much round. Usually we see the 3 linebackers lead the team in tackles, and then you've got a cornerback or a safety.
But seeing Nick Coleman that much shows you that the defensive line and the linebacker, everybody's just having a rough day. And Coleman missed some tackles as well. But he was very much a part of the game. They should have forced a 4th down, but he let a guy get away from him on 3rd down. Unlike Love, he let this guy lunge forward and get the first down. And then Elliott had a roughing the passer, which was kind of necessary.
He also has a quarterback hurry. Is that on the same play? I don't think it was.
I'm not sure. But that ended up being almost, I think they said 29-yard gains because he had a 15-yard penalty, plus they had gained 14 yards on the play. So we haven't heard his name much, which means he hasn't been making huge mistakes, but Saturday he made a big mistake and basically gave Wake Forest 29 yards. But and hopefully the rest of the defense steps up so that we will be talking less about the safeties next week.
Did Fertitta recorded a couple of tackles too. The first
special team.
I think they were all on special teams. Yeah, they were all on special teams.
So, and talking about penalties, the band got a penalty in this game.
Did they get a penalty or a warning?
Or they got a warning. The announcers actually, I heard it when I rewatched the game, the announcers actually warned them that if it happens again, it'll be a penalty, but they need to stop playing music when at the line of scrimmage, basically. But that's when the crowd got really loud, so...
Hey, let's get a warning every week if it gets the crowd more involved.
But the announcer were talking about it. Usually that's just kind of nobody really finds out about it, but usually they don't announce it like they did there. So I don't know if the coaches had complained about it. I don't know what was going on.
All right. And then special teams. CJ Sanders had a really nice return.
If he'd take the shoelaces out of his shoe, he would have maybe scored a touchdown.
When I saw that live before the replay, it looked like someone tripped him from the sideline because it looked like there was no way that the defender was the one that made that tackle because it just looked too far away. But it was so close.
It gave him some confidence, and then I don't know if it was the next kickoff, but he brought one out of the end zone and only made it to like the 17 or 18 yard line, and you could see Brian Kelly having a talk with him after that. So I think that's one thing that's kept Sanders off the field, why we haven't seen him more, is because situations like that, the coaches don't quite trust him. He makes a big play and he thinks he can do it again versus doing the same. Good way to describe him is like all our golf games. The reason we're so terrible is like, oh, we can make that shot, and then you never do. If we'd all start playing it safe, you'd play a really good game. And that's what keeps Sanders off the field is he doesn't play it safe. He wants that big play and gets a little overconfident. But he was close to finally breaking one off.
I didn't see this until I'm just looking at the stats here, but Stefferson fielded one of the kickoffs.
Okay.
He didn't run it out. He just downed it.
Jonathan Duer was actually doing the kickoffs, and I thought he did pretty good. Not all of them went to the end zone, but some of them did, and so it seems like he's gotten over that freshman wall, I guess. And then Yoon, they let him try a 50-yard field goal. It was straight, but it's just a little bit short.
And he was 2 of 3 on the day.
Oh, and he is now Notre Dame's second highest scorer. Yes. He had the points. How many points did he score?
He has 254 points.
That kind of shocked me. Like, I didn't expect to see. I was like, oh, hey, Yoon's the second leading scorer in Notre Dame history.
Well,
there's been some good kickers at Notre Dame.
Yeah, but a lot of this has to do with how good your offense is.
That's true.
Just how many opportunities they get to kick extra points. But more importantly, field goals. And he hasn't been getting a whole lot of red zone field goals this year.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Newsom had a good punt. Didn't do too bad. He had one inside the 5-yard line. So he didn't have a bad day. He did pretty good, actually.
All right. That's all that I've got. Was there anything else that we missed that we wanted to discuss?
Just some random news. Corey Holmes, you know, transferred to Purdue. They announced today that he's done with football and pursuing other things. I think he had one catch for 7 yards on the season. So it took more than his speed to get on the field. So we thought he could make a difference at Purdue. He had a couple years of eligibility left. But he has decided to pursue other things.
Anything else?
Micah Jones, one of the commits, announced that he's going to enroll early. So that's always a good thing.
What position does he play?
Wide receiver. So he might have decided that he can go in there and catch some of those balls that they're dropping. Miami's coming up.
And speaking of wide receivers, I'm not joking. Equanimeous St. Brown, I mean, if Stefferson, if Chase Claypool, some of these freshmen that aren't playing but will be playing next year and competing for a starting job, I think he'll still be a starter. But there's guys behind him who, if they're hungrier, if they're working harder, and if they're more consistent than he is, then he may lose some playing time.
Yeah. It was crazy that when the season started, it was Brian Kelly even mentioned that he's the obvious number one guy. We got to figure out who's number two behind him. Maybe he needed a little more competition in camp.
Yeah.
The guys weren't providing it. Maybe that's Stefferson's fault because he wasn't part of the first team. Maybe if he would have been part of the first team, it would have put some pressure on EQ. But he can be a great player. He's just got it's a mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
What were you starting to say?
Miami, you know, on defense, they have this big gold chain. If they make a play on defense, the player gets to wear it.
I'm afraid they won't get to wear it a whole lot on Saturday.
I hope you're right. CJ Sanders' mom tweeted something out about getting a gold chain with a big cross on it for the parents to pass around during the game. So it'll be interesting to see if they try anything like that. But there is already stuff going on between Notre Dame and Miami. Brandon Wimbush mentioned in the post game that next week they're going to come out. You know, this was a bad game. Next week they're going to come out. And I don't know how he worded it, but crush the team. Did you hear it?
Yeah, I thought he said dominate, have a more dominating performance, or something to the effect
get
of
back to dominate.
Beating Miami worse than what they beat Wake Forest.
Yeah.
Is what he was saying.
Well, people have been taking his comments and they're tagging players and the coaches from Miami in that. So I'm guessing they all know about it and they're using that as
fodder. I was a little worried about that comment helping inspire. I doubt Miami needs more inspiration. They're also playing for a chance to get in the playoff.
Yeah.
But I don't like giving them any extra motivation.
No.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. I think we're going to wrap this up. Head on over to the forums if you want to ask questions or join the discussion. And check out the website, irishsportstalk.net. Solon has another article over there talking about Wimbush taking another step. And he mentioned a few things like the ESPN index in this game really wasn't ever close, even though the final score was. So check that out, irishsportstalk.net for the website and forums.irishsportstalk for the forums. And there is a link on the website as well to get over to the forums. So you can just go over to the website and click on over to join the forums. And it's free. You just need to sign up and register.
TikTok, they came out with a shirt. The guy that made the TikTok shirts has another one about Catholics versus convicts, and he has something else right in the back. Miami also has one of their own that they're selling, and that's how it looks.
That looks way too cartoonish.
I agree.
The Miami one looks way too cartoonish. It looks like Daffy Duck.
Basically stepping on a clover leaf.
Yeah.
So they're trying to bring their own shirt. Anyways, it should be an exciting week.
But check out TikTok shirt. You can find him on Twitter at TikTok, and I'm sure there's a link over there to get that shirt. So thank you guys for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with a friend. If you ever have a question or topic you'd like to discuss, send us an email, mail@irishsportstalk.net, or send us a message on Facebook or Twitter, and we'd love to have your input and discuss topics that interest you.
That it's TikTok Nation, I thought. The back of the shirt says Stopping Hurricanes Since 88.
Nice. So, thank you guys for listening, and until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.